Hey, this is Jeremy Roenick, and guess what? You guys are listening to the Jim Bob Show.
Hey, this is Wayne Larrabee, and you're listening to Roar on WGN.
Hey, this is Jim McMahon, and you're listening to the Jim Bob Show.
I had to pop a beer for this one.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Brian Urlacher, and you're listening to the Jim Bob Show.
That's awesome. Oh,
and
that's
then,
it.
How about one? This is Brian Urlacher. I'm not a bitch.
No.
That's about, you love that one, huh?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I started like every DJ. I wanted free drinks and to pick up chicks. That's how
I started. I'm sure all your relatives, especially your mother-in-law, appreciates that.
And the kids in the car.
Yeah.
And your kids.
Chicago's a great sports town. They're hungry for people that play hard. And if you play hard and win, they love you forever.
720 WGN, high atop Chicago in the Skyline Studio on great stations around the country. It is the Jim Bob Show. It is the Jim Bob Show game day edition. And Jim Bob, as we are in postseason mode, we are able to sort of dabble in a bunch of different things, whether it's those emerging cool sports that are out there, whether it's the Final Four or March Madness, or whether it is that entertainment business that is such a big part of the excitement of El Bandito Yankee, and a guy that is in and around that in a big way and going to be a lot more. And of course, one of those top personalities in the music world, Nashville for sure, but all over the country, is the one and only Jim Bob. It's DJ Silver.
Let me tell you something. He's groundbreaking, man. Let me tell you something. This guy is the first DJ to ever be signed on a record label. We're going to talk to my friend, DJ Silver. Welcome to the show, buddy.
Thank you guys for having us, and you're hired. I need a publicist, Jim Bob.
Well, hey, you know what? I tell you what, I could take the job. I need the money. Okay, so hey, buddy, I know we're catching you, and like I said, when you're off the road and you're back home, you're always doing. You got a whole list of honeydew chores, and one of them today is running the kids around and everything. So we're gonna get right to it, buddy. Is that, you know, you are one of the preeminent, the first DJ ever signed to a record label. Can you just tell the listeners, how do you accomplish that, and how did that all come about?
You know, I lived in Austin, Texas, and I always had lofty goals. I feel like, you know, shoot for the moon, you'll hit a star kind of thing, you know, and you know, I came up here, I put up the first like country remix record, and I picked up a manager, and I said, I want a record deal. And he was like, well, we'll shop it. He goes, I don't know, no one has ever done this before. And I said, well, it's time to do it, right? So we went to all the different record labels and met with all of them. Nobody said no. And we met with Sony, and I said, this is where I want to be. And my manager said, yeah, we don't have an offer from Sony yet. And I was like, well, get it, you know? And then that was 2012. And in 2013, we released my first record through Sony called The Country Club.
Think about this, and, DJ, you know, you're there. We were just with you out of the Super Bowl and clubs, and, you know, whether it's LA or Scottsdale or all of those kind of things. And Chicago certainly has a DJ scene. But as one of those pioneers in this area, did Nashville have a big DJ scene, or were you kind of a trendsetter there as well?
So two parts of that was, like, I cut my teeth in Chicago. That's where I learned to basically play music.
Nice.
At the old Excalibur Vision, Red No Fives, the Mixmaster Mics, the Bad Boy Bill kind of DJs. But yeah, so I got very familiar with Chicago. It's one of the best cities in the world to play, still is to this day. But as far as Nashville, there was a point in time, if I played in Nashville, I was taking my buddy's gig because he was the only DJ in the town, the only place worth playing at, I guess, so to speak. And now, I tell everybody, you know, from Miami to Vegas, I would take Nashville on a Tuesday over your clubs on a Saturday. And there's DJs playing right now. Every venue downtown's got a DJ playing in separate shifts and rooftop parties and nightclubs. And it's cool to see the industry transform into something big and all encompassing, so to speak.
You know, what, let's go back to the beginning, is that, you know, cause you've got a rich history of, and you bring up Chicago, and what inspired you to first pursue that career? Was it like for me,
doing weddings or something?
Was it the only thing, you know, well, I'm good at this. How'd this come about?
I don't know how good at it I am, but, I'll be honest. I started like every DJ. I wanted free drinks and to pick up chicks. That's how it started.
I'm sure all your relatives, especially your mother, Bob. Appreciate that.
And the kids in the car.
Yeah.
And your kids. Well, so we know they're your wife's kids.
I can lie to you and tell you it was a deep running passion that burned in my soul, but that was it.
So you're like every other rock musician. Oh, I'll tell you what. I was 5'3" in high school and I never grew, and I picked up a guitar and girls started liking me, and then, you know, okay, he became a rock star. I get it. You know?
Well, if I had abs, it wouldn't be fair for every other man on this planet. At the end of the day, I just really loved what I did, and you know, and I got a degree in education, and they told me what I was going to make a year teaching high school, but I just got up and walked out.
Uh-huh.
I make that a month playing music, and I love what I do.
How was touring with artists like Jason Aldean and Florida Georgia Line and all the other guys and people you've toured with? How's that influenced you and your music and your performance style? What have you learned from that? And tell us that.
Well, you know, opening for all these guys, everyone has their distinct sound and distinctive style. And it's your job as a DJ to say, if I play before, you just said Florida Georgia Line, then I go into Jason. FGL, when they were together, was more of a poppy country. I could get away with a lot more. You play hip hop. You got a younger crowd fan base. And, you know, I would switch the music to fit FGL. Then when Aldean would come up, I would switch it over to classic rock. Just and to fit Jason's format and to fit his, you got to weave those two crowds together and to set the next guy up to win. And I think it just comes from years of doing it to see and knowing the acts that are coming in behind you and traveling with them every night. You get to know them, you get a rapport with them, and you want to see your buddies win. And your job is to make them, when they walk on stage, for the stage to be hot, already getting down, and everyone in the crowd's having a good time already. And when they walk on, the party's already started. They just take it up a notch.
There's a song titled "The Party's Already Started."
Put that on my headstone.
That's part of maybe the secret to the success, or why? Because you look at that list, it is the who's who of music, and so the word is out that you are a guy that can do it at a high level, work with so many different crowds. The range of music is there. Do you think that's part of the success? Right? Is that versatility that you get it regardless of the artist? You know how to get in there and make it happen.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, but you know, and also part of it is knowing your place. If your place is to set up for the next guy, be a setup guy. You don't need to do cartwheels off the front stage, try to steal the show. It's like a three-hole hitter and a cleanup hitter. You know, you got a three-hole hitter, so they have to pitch to the four-hole hitter. And it's kind of a thing. And it's just, and you know, it's a team. It's a setup, and it's to make sure that the night runs smooth and ramps up as the night goes and finally hits its pinnacle when the headliner hits the stage. Yeah.
You've been part of the music scene for years now. You know, you're going into your second decade, and you've seen a lot of changes in the music industry and the audiences and the preferences as they've evolved over time. And what have you seen most that sticks out, and what's evolved in the music scene?
Especially lately, what I love most is all the old music is coming back so hard. All the classic hip-hop, all the 90s country, all the retro music, and I just almost say, because like the newer hip hop is just so bad, it's making the older music come back, and it's fun to play clubs again, or fun to play these venues when you can play Notorious B.I.G. in the middle of a nightclub in Vegas, the whole crowd gets down to it, and I just love the music runs in cycles, and it's definitely running in a circle. And party music is back, you know.
You mentioned the affinity to those different styles, and of course, you know, those roots in Chicago and Bad Boy Bill and all that kind of stuff. But for you personally, like when you're in the car with the kids driving around, or at home doing stuff or home projects or whatever, just by yourself, like, do you really enjoy all kinds of music, or do you have like a preference? Is there sort of like your jam for DJ Silver?
Like just in the car, I listen to a lot of satellite radio. We have like the chill station on, the down tempo house music. Or we listen to talk shows, podcasts. My kid, we just had Kids Bop on. So we try to listen to a little bit of everything. And, you know, I switch over to country every once in a while. Depends who's in the car. Or I got a playlist that says Wake's Pool Playlist, Wake's my son. Every time we hear a song he likes, I put it on. So it's a playlist made up of rap to house music to from John Summit to Diplo to, I don't know, Morgan Wallen. Everything's on there.
So, you know, I told you I ran into Uncle Cracker Maddie the other day when we were retiring in Chelios's Jersey, and boy, we had, you know, we had Eddie Vedder over here, we had Kid Rock here, and then I had Uncle Cracker, and Matt's just a super dude. I had a lot of fun with him and so forth. But you know, you're at the forefront of blending country music in with other genres, and like, you know, that's what Matt and Kid put together, that collaboration that they did and so forth. Where do you see the future of country music heading after what we've seen over the last 10 years?
Well, I see, like, the fan base of country music is finally getting younger with the Morgan Wallens, the Zach Bryan's, the Bailey Zimmerman's, the Jelly Rolls of the world. They're bringing a younger audience to the country, which is great because it's going to make the longevity of the format stay for a while. And you know, I just love how, you know, we go out to shows. There's people from 5 years old to 90 years old in the crowd buying tickets, having the best time, you hope. And the way, especially with like the Bailey Zimmermans, like I said, of the world, the Morgan Wallens, they're setting it up to have a fan base for a very long career. And it's, and I don't know if it's something they try to do, but it's definitely something they're doing. And I think a lot of sports, even down to NASCAR, could take notes off of those chapters of those books, just to, because I mean, if you just keep pulling out of one barrel of fan base, so to speak, like one bucket of something, that bucket's going to run out. You got to always be replenishing it.
Yeah, you think about when you're able to do this with some of those biggest names in music. You mentioned some of those different venues. We, like I said, we saw you at the Super Bowl. You were out at Waste Management Open talking NASCAR. So a lot of events. Growing up, my job in high school and college is I worked the backstage gate at Alpine Valley, which is an outdoor music center. So all of those tours coming in. So I love that. And I have a respect for just those great music venues that are out there. As some artists are saying, hey, if they get the headline Madison Square Garden, it's great. For you, DJ Silver, like, are there places, just places, where you're like, man, I'd love to play that place, or that was awesome when I did.
Well, let me also on that, because that was one of my questions I had. Thanks for stealing, Dan. Appreciate it. I mean, but you know, when you perform at these venues, you know, also, how do they compare to, like, you know, he just mentioned, I mean, these are different type of venues and these festivals and club shows. So you're entertaining in all three and four different, five different formats. I mean, so it's kind of like, it's a little hectic for you from one day you're doing, you know, the Foundation Room and the next thing you're in Allegiant Stadium. So there's got to be some stories behind all these venue plays.
I know. And I was going to say is, like, when you start music, you want to play the new Braves Stadium. You want to play it. You want to play Madison Square Garden. You want to play the Staples Center. You want to do the Red Rocks of the world, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
Then you finally get to do those venues, and you're just like, there are very few venues that live up to the hype and the expectation like Madison Square, like a Staples Center, you know, especially like a Red Rocks. And to be honored to even be on these stages with such great people, and you know, just tell your kids one day, it's like when he's going to a concert at Red Rock, I was like, dude, I played there three times, you know?
Yeah. You know, having shared the stage with some of the biggest names in music, you know, what's some of the learning experience that and pieces of advice that you've received from some of these artists? Because what you said earlier is just know your place,
like,
know
hey,
your
keep
lane.
Keep it down.
Yeah. That's right. The big, hey, shut up, guy. But like, what is some of the stuff that they've taught you or suggested to you that you've had to learn quite a bit?
You know, I'm blessed enough to get to do tons of major music festivals like Stagecoach, Tortuga, Faster Horses, Watershed, all these big, massive festivals. And, you know, you got to get to know these people that you're playing before or after. You got to know their music. You got to be able to blend and twist the crowd in front of them into this crowd. So it's not so much a shock factor when these people walk on. And also, you got to pay attention to a lot of things, like, are they doing cover songs? What's their walk-in music? What's their walk-out music? What do they not want to hear? And if you do it right, it should switch between every act, and you should kind of know where to go with the music from there. You know, you open in front of Old Crow Medicine Show, you're not going to play Waka Flocka. But when Luke Bryan's going on, you play Waka Flocka.
You're like a literal, like the physical musical segue, yes. Right? You know, bridging... Yeah. The gaps between those artists.
Yeah. You know,
I got to switch their mind frame from just say it is Old Crow Medicine Show. Then you come in a festival. The next one will be a Kane Brown. So I have to take that older audience, get them ready for the newer young people that's about to come in with the newer sound of country music, so to speak, with the Kane Brown. So it's not a shock when he walks out.
What keeps you personally innovative? Because, I mean, you got some new music stuff that you're going to drop on us here and so forth. But what is the inspiration for your own innovation?
And I'll be honest with you. I've been traveling the world for 23 years now, and I still love doing it. I still get inspired when I have a night off and I get to go out here, somebody either DJ play music or a live venue or whatever. And it's just, I see people doing things, and I just still have the opportunity to do it myself on a high level. And you know, every day we get to do this is a blessing. It's a gift. Tomorrow's not promised. So I always just try to make the best I can. And it's, like I said, I'm still inspired every time I'll turn a radio or something on it, and it'll make me think of something else. And And as long as I have that, I want to keep doing it, you know?
Well, as inspired as you are, you're inspiring other people. You mentioned Know Your Place, and your place increasingly over the last handful of years is an ambassador for great products, for the best products, let's say. And excited, obviously, the show is tied in, connected, and supportive of El Bandido Yankee, which is, you know, the top tequila out there. Talk a little bit about that. Jim Bob asked how the whole career came about. How did El Bandido Yankee relationship come about, and what should fans look forward to this summer?
Well, because I'm cool.
That's right.
Answer this. You know, a DJ.
Jim Bob's cool. Yeah, that's it. No, we've been working on this for a while. In the middle of working on this, I felt like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I felt like Jim Bob and I have struck a friendship.
Yeah.
And that was more important to me than just, and I've had other companies in the meantime come at me, but it wasn't there. I'm pushing something that I don't care about or didn't like, and I wasn't going to do that. And I first heard of the product, then I met Jim Bob, and not in that order. Then kind of really didn't give the product a chance until I met Jim Bob, and I was like, dude, I get this. Yeah. I get this. I want to be a part of this.
Well, I love it because we are collaborating, and you're a great collaborate artist and so forth. And that's one of the things that I look at, and it's a great question about how we came about, because we're a collaboration, but it's the same deal. When I collaborate from a business perspective, you know, and we got 28 different brands that we ride for those brands, and we ride for the brand. But when I look to collaborate, I look to have a business relationship and a friendship and something really positive out of that. But when you're choosing to collaborate on your business and your music, I'm assuming a lot of the same things that came together for us decide who you want to collaborate with.
Yeah, it's got to be organic. You've got to be able to tell that I truly enjoy the product or like it or believe in it, or I wouldn't push it. And it can't look forced. And if I don't like it or just feel forced to do it, you're going to tell.
Yeah.
And, you know, this morning I started my day with El Bandido meetings and, you know, working on Nashville launch parties, Tampa, Florida launch parties. I'm excited to get it going. I was kidding around. Jim Bob, Allie calls me today, goes, we're going to do this Thursday. And I'm like, in 2 days, Allie? No. Yo. Yeah. But I love the fact that she woke up and decided, forgot she hadn't called me in a week and decided that we're going, you know, I love it.
Yeah.
I'm here for it. And it's just, you can tell there's excitement, and it's not just somebody you hired to do that. You can tell the excitement was true and they wanted to make sure it's successful. Everyone I've spoke to in El Bandido, and that's the reason for it. And I think it's going to be a super simple, you know, and we got a whole game plan we want to do, you know, do VIP launches or do parties in Nashville. And you know, like I said, we spoke to the Hard Rock in Tampa today. You know, we're working on a VIP tasting for all their people. And we get a lot of things going. I've updated my rider. Now it says El Bandido, 2 bottles, every time I walk into a venue.
You know, when we put together a lot of these companies, and like especially when we put together El Bandido Yankee, we put together a vision board, and it's an interesting process. I mean, it's basically a collage, is that you've got your people there that are helping create your vision for the brand, and they show you a picture. Does this resonate with your brand? And so when we did the vision board for El Bandido Yankee, we've got a DJ spinning the records and a bunch of people in front of him just having a great time. And I looked at the vision board. I got to send this to you because you'll flip. But it was all about bringing people together, exactly what you do, which is bringing people together, have some fun. Let's move around. Let's laugh and let's just enjoy and love everybody that we're with. And that was really kind of the message for our brand. And so, you know, every time that you're doing a performance, I mean, I know you, and I know you want it to be memorable. And that's why what I love about you, and the fact that everything you do, you're out there, and it's like, man, this might be my last show, and you're giving the most memorable performance. And so with that said, do you have a most memorable that really was something that happened? Like maybe maybe your computer blew up or something. I mean, like, what was one of your...
That did happen in Philadelphia once, actually.
Serious there. I mean, gosh, I'm a soothsayer.
Philadelphia, it overheated and completely shut down. That was a rough day. And I had to play Vegas the next day and called the venue, actually went and bought a new computer, had it waited on me, and I gave them all my my files to Dropbox, where the music was backed up and they had it completely loaded for me when I walked on.
Well, I hope we're now. Are we carrying two computers around? I think this might be something we want to do.
Like a plan
I always
a,
tell
plan
people
B.
I got two Bugattis in my bag at all times. Yeah. At the end of the day, it's why you back it up. Why it lives on Dropbox. But I still think one of my favorite moments was at Red Rocks. And I played, it was me and Luke Combs, and it was his first time to play Red Rocks, and he was on XM, he was on the highway or something live, and it was just a cool day. I was just so proud of Luke. He was walking around taking it in and doing things that normal headliners don't do, like sitting in the venue outside. He sound checked, just that kind of stuff, right? And so I played in front of him, and there's a picture, and I'd have to send it to you, but it's the entire place with their phones in the air lighting up for a DJ at a country show. And the place is not big. It's only hold like 10,000 people, but it was just 10,000 people became friends at that moment. And it was such a cool thing. And I remember hearing people behind me were just like, wow, dude, this is awesome, you know? And I get back home and Red Rocks reached out to my managers and asked if they could have that picture to put it on the wall at Red Rocks. Because wow. If you go backstage at Red Rocks, it's all the people that have played Red Rocks.
For the listener, of course, let them know we're talking with the one and only DJ Silver. And you think of those venues as far as that question I brought up, that is one of those where the venue is as big a star as anybody who takes the stage there. Yep. So to have that happen there and for you to help with Luke and be a part of that moment, I think is absolutely crazy. You think about this, when you mentioned that in Philadelphia, that's when it melted down, you know, and that relationship with the crowd. And so Philadelphia, Jim Bob, you know this, there's a jail in for the Eagles. They're the ones who attacked Santa Claus.
Yeah, no, they throw snowballs at Santa Claus. Well, who does that? Come on, honestly.
How did the crowd work with it?
Philadelphia's, yeah. Listen, man, I'll tell you what, the Wells Fargo Center is, when we went there, I mean, we spent some time. It was crazy because we saw the WWE event one night, then we saw the basketball game the next night, and we saw the Flyers the next night. So we had the 76ers playing, and the crowds were so distinctly different, man. I'll tell you what, is it? And that's a lot what you walk into sometimes, too. I mean, you know, you go on from Foundation Room to the next thing you know, you might be playing, you know, Gillies. I mean, and so you're accustomed to doing all that stuff. I was just doing it for wanted to see what these crowds actually like. A funny story, in Philadelphia, they teach these kids young. There's a lady, and she is just cursing. They were playing the Nets.
It was one of those where I guess the ref had made a bad call, and they were like, but like the entire crowd was like 8-year-olds.
And then they're going like, and they're doing the whole FU to the ref and FU to the players. And then the little girl's in on the deal. And I'm looking, I go, my gosh, she's cursing. She's really cursing. She's 8.
like the parents were encouraged.
They got a proud mama next to them looking for their Pall Mall cigarette.
Yeah, exactly. But hey.
I always tell everybody my favorite two teams are the Dallas Cowboys and whoever's playing the Eagles.
Oh, buddy, I'll tell you what, man.
That's just the truth.
So Red Rock is one of those great venues. And folks, if you're not familiar with Red Rock, you got to look it up. It's absolutely beautiful and gorgeous. And you're not the first artist that I've talked to that says that's the most spectacular place to play. Is there anything else out there that comes to your mind that you really enjoyed?
I love playing the Wharf at Orange Beach in Orange Beach, Alabama, right there on the ocean, just a smaller venue, but the people there that want to be there. You know, there's festivals out there that you can't wait to play, like Faster Horses in Brooklyn, Michigan, or Tortuga in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, or Watershed in the Gorge in Washington. It's one of those places that it has a history, but the venue, the event itself has its own life and its own persona. And it's got a reputation. People want to go where they know the craziest people are going to be at. And those are the places. And to get to do those every year, still to this day, I'll leave a name out because he's probably get mad at me for telling the story, but it was raining and he didn't want to play in the rain. And there are 35,000 people out there. And I was like, dude, are you kidding me right now? I said, we get to do this, man. He goes, I'm not walking out there. And I told the stage manager, I was like, I'll do his set and I'll do my set. And he goes, really? I said, yeah, let's go. And I walked out and played in the rain for an hour and a half.
That is awesome. I love that.
And it was one of those memories where people was pouring down rain, singing their hearts out. And I was just, and that day right there, you know, it's just, I've always said, we get to do this.
Yeah, right. We're not,
and nothing is promising.
Yeah, I love your attitude, buddy. Love your attitude.
And if I told you who that was, you'd be very disappointed, which I won't. But but at the end of the day, it's like, if you don't look forward to doing it, when it becomes a payday, when it becomes a job, when you need to stop doing it because people can tell.
What's new? A couple of last things. What's new on your music front, and what can we expect from you coming out here? And we got a timeline.
So we got, you know, we have a tour coming up. We start with Aldine in the 1st of June, go all the way through October. Festival season starts in April. Stagecoach, Coachella, Tortuga. I'm doing the Rock the Country festivals with Kid Rock and Aldine for seven weekends. And DJ-wise, we got shows from Miami to San Diego and New York, Atlantic City, all the way down to Phoenix, Scottsdale, Dallas, Nashville. So we're rolling and can't really talk about it right now, but in a couple of weeks, we're about to make a massive announcement for the first time in the history of electronic music. And so you'll see it, but I can't really talk about it right now, but it's a first time at the largest electronic music festival in the world.
You know, you did and sign an NDA. Okay. I mean, we have mutual NDAs here, so you can tell me when we get off the air.
I'll be happy to tell you when we get off the air. But yeah, so it's a massive thing. And you know, I'll be honestly, I am looking forward to launching a partnership with El Bandito. I'm known as a tequila guy, and I can't wait to take it to my favorite cities and do pop-up shows and invite-only shows and smaller venues and just getting the right people in there to drink the product and get the buzz built up around it and get the two relationships and two brands, so to speak, synced.
You got the book Good to Great. They always talk about getting people, the right people on the bus. And in our situation, get the right people in the club.
DJ Silver in the club or at Red Rocks or some of these great festivals, you know that El Bandito Yankee will not be far behind, be front and center, out in front, and along with for that great ride. And of course, we'll have links up at WGNradio.com. And DJ Silver, as we let you go, where can people go social media wise, keep up with you as best they can, and see you this summer?
Yeah, it's simple. All socials are at DJ Silver One, DEEJAY Silver One. And mostly, I answer all my stuff on Instagram and, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. I'll be the guy responding back. And I'm excited. We got some big announcements coming up with El Bandito and some look out for the city. And, can't wait to launch a little event in Chicago, too. And once we get them locked in and can advertise them, we'll be there.
Well, look forward to it, buddy. I'll tell you what, you go enjoy the time with your family and have a good day off, because I know your schedule is intense, man. And we'll catch up and we'll get all the links out, like Dane said. But go have a fun day, man. And we'll be breaking out the Bandito together. I'll see you, buddy.
Can't even wait. Thanks, guys, for the time. I appreciate you.
Yeah.